She had adapted to the belief that she would be branded a murderer for the rest of her life. So when she came in contact with anyone who believed in her innocence, she would tell them it meant something to her. If she was to remain a free woman, she vowed to always acknowledge those who'd believed in her. During the trial and afterward, during her more than 10 years in prison, she had never cared. But now that she had the chance for a new start, she would not jinx herself with negativity just yet.
"Glad to, ma'am. Now, if you'll excuse us."
Officer Waterman took charge of his men while Tessa waited for the go-ahead before entering her house. 20 minutes later, Lee arrived. Tessa was still waiting outside with Sam.
"Any idea who did this?"
Succinct. That was Lee.
"No clue. The crime scene techs just got here. Said it will take them a few hours to process the scene," Sam explained. "Fingerprints, fibers, the usual laundry list of procedures they have to follow."
"They allow you inside?"
he asked Tessa. "Not yet."
"Tessa, I can arrange for you to stay someplace else. A hotel, a friend's house. It will be a while before they let you inside. What about Jill? Do you think she would let you stay with her for the night?"
Why didn't I think of that? And wasn't Jill supposed to call me? "Yes, I can stay with her. But first, I'd like to call and make sure she doesn't have other plans." Tessa knew that Jill had planned on staying at Tessa's house tonight. She was supposed to call after her scheduled client left. Obviously, she had either forgotten or called the house while they were still at Lee's office, and Tessa did not have a cell phone. "Sam, can I use your phone?"
"Sure thing."
He handed her the phone, and she dialed Jill's office number, because she knew that Jill left her cell phone number on her answering machine message for her clients, and Tessa had no clue what her cell phone number was. She listened to the recorded message, then motioned to Sam for a pen. He removed a pen from the pocket of one of the police cars and handed it to her. Tessa scribbled the number on the palm of her hand and tossed the pen back to Sam, nodding toward the car, meaning put the damned pen back where you found it. After 6 rings, Jill's voicemail picked up, asking the caller to leave a short and sweet message. "Hey, Jill, it's me. I need to stay at your place tonight. Just giving you a heads up." She ended the call and returned the phone to Sam.
"You didn't tell her your place had been trashed, did you?"
"No, it would only cause her to worry. I'll tell her later. She said she was going to call when she finished up with her client. It's possible she's still at her office. Let me try calling again." Sam tossed his cell phone back to her. She repeated the call, but instead of hanging up, she left a message. "Jill, it's me. If you can pick up the phone, do so. It's important." She waited for a clicking sound, something to indicate that Jill was picking up the phone, but she heard nothing. "Okay, she isn't at her office or at home. I'll get a hotel. Where is Rochelle staying? Maybe she and I can have coffee or dinner. Get to know one another." Given the intense hatred she had felt for the woman ever since finding the bodies in the pool, the words coming from her mouth sounded so strange. Her past intense hatred. Tessa felt sure, even though it opened up the door to so many other possibilities, that Rochelle absolutely believed that Liam was dead. And after learning that Liam's condo had been burned to the ground, she was beginning to think that Rochelle might be right, and Liam really was dead. And she suddenly realized, putting two and two together, that's what Harry, Lee, Sam, and even Michael Chen thought. They thought that the bones that had been dug up were Liam's, and that the DNA taken from Rochelle would prove it. And if Liam's body had been buried, then either Joel or the other man, his twin, was the killer. Oh my God. Chapter 28. The crime scene unit gave Tessa and Sam the all clear 4 hours after its arrival. Knowing what the kitchen looked like, Tessa went straight to her new bedroom. It, too, had been trashed, but there really weren't any personal items she cared about, so it was no loss to her, only to Darlene, who'd spent hours purchasing things for Tessa. Next, she entered the room across the hall that Sam had converted into a library. When she stepped fully into the room, she gasped. All of her books had been knocked off the shelves, some with pages ripped out. "Who in the hell does this kind of thing?" she asked of no one in particular. She began putting the books back on the shelves, and those with torn pages off to the side. It sickened her that her college textbooks with the pages torn out of them were tossed around like garbage. Those were the only books with any type of sentimental value. And that's when she remembered the boxes upstairs in the master bedroom. She raced down the hall and up the stairs. She stopped outside the master bedroom before going inside. Now these things in here were personal, mostly things that belonged to Joel. But a thief could get a nice payout if they found Joel's expensive wristwatches and gold jewelry. She had a few pieces that were expensive, but she really didn't care about them one way or the other. Entering the room, she saw more of the same. Boxes torn open, the contents scattered all over the floor.
"Tess," Sam said, "are you okay?"
"No, I am not okay. Who in the world would do this? How did they get inside? Just look at this." She gestured to the floor.
"The police seem to think that whoever was here was searching for something."
"Isn't that obvious? The entire place has been destroyed."
"They didn't take your televisions, the laptop, and the guest bedroom, things that burglars usually steal. Whoever was in here was not only looking for something, but they wanted to leave a message, and they want you to know it."
She shook her head. "Who?" Then it suddenly occurred to her. "Lara!"
"No. I know for a fact it wasn't her. That was my first thought, too. I called Lee right after he left. He says Lara has been in jail for the past 48 hours. Prostitution."
"What?"
"You heard it right. Prostitution. I can't believe she couldn't wait a few days. Damned girl needs to learn a lesson. I told Lee not to bail her out. I hope you're okay with that."
"Am I?" She knew what it was like to be locked away, to have your freedom taken. While there was no love lost between her and Lara, she was her only living relative. "I'm not okay with this, Sam. Call Lee and tell him to post her bond, but only on this condition. She has to stay with me. Or you, I suppose. If by some cruel trick of the lousy criminal justice system, I end up back in prison. Not live with you. I wouldn't put that burden on your shoulders." She stopped. "I have burdened you with her for years. Why am I just now realizing this? I take back what I said. Let her stay there a few days, then I'll bail her out. Can she even be bailed out? I guess I should have asked that first. It's not like I don't have any experience in this area." Tessa rubbed her eyes, not caring that she had smeared her mascara. "My life is just one giant mess." Sam looked at her, then stepped over the contents of the boxes on the floor. When he reached her, he took her in his arms and held her tightly. Then, before either of them realized it, his lips were on hers. He kissed her with such tenderness that tears filled her eyes. She tried to free herself from his embrace and said, "I'm not your kind, Sam."
Why don't you let me decide what my kind is? I think you're perfect, Tess. In every way that matters.
He kissed her again. And this time she kissed him back, and felt a tingling sensation in the pit of her stomach and parts lower. The familiar shiver of desire coursed through her, fogging her mind with images that told her that she wanted Sam in ways she had never wanted Joel. Joel. Sam, I can't, she said, forcing herself out of the safe circle of his embrace.
You can't, or just don't want to,
he whispered. Both. Neither. Not yet. She was so confused, she sounded like a schoolgirl with her first real crush. He released her, and she felt empty.
I know the timing isn't right, but it will be. Someday. I promise.
She nodded because she didn't know what else to say or do. She and Sam together seemed wrong in some ways, but now wasn't the time to contemplate the why and why nots of a relationship. Sam, what is going to happen when Chen goes to Judge Kreider? Is the case against me going to be dropped? And if it is, when will we find out? And if it isn't, when will we get a trial date?
Soon. We'll know very soon. Once the polygraph results are in Chen's hands, establishing that you could not have committed the murders on Friday since the victims were all alive on Saturday, they will have to drop the charges. As to establishing the actual facts of the murders, Harry's the key. He's good and he's fast. I'm guessing we should know everything there is to know about the murders in a week at most. But by that time, the charges against you should have already been dropped, since not knowing who the adult male was who was killed and who killed the girls is irrelevant to whether or not you were the killer.
What if things don't work out? What if Rosa fails the polygraph test? What if the DNA results are useless? She hated sounding wimpy and childish, but her veneer of toughness was breaking down moment by moment, especially when Sam was around.
We will deal with it. Together, Tess. You and me.
Sam smiled, and her heart melted. Despite all the negativity that surrounded her, he gave her hope. And if that's all she walked away with, she was okay with that, because until Sam, she had had no hope. Thank you, Sam. While her words were simple, their meaning was deep, and they came directly from her heart.
We'll work this out, Tess, but later. First, we need to find a place for you to stay. I would have you stay at my house, but I don't think we should. Yet.
He grinned, and she smiled back, which reminded her. Did Jill ever return my call? I can't believe I forgot all about her.
She didn't call my cell, but obviously I can't tell you about the landline.
I should call her again, let her know what's happened. He handed her his cell phone.
Call her and see if she's okay.
Tessa scrolled through the recently called numbers, found Jill's cell number, and hit the call button. I need one of these gizmos. Jill's voicemail picked up, and Tessa left another message, telling her it was urgent that Jill return her call. No answer. Tessa gave him the phone back. I do not think she would be at the office this late. She told me she had one appointment scheduled for early this morning, said it couldn't be rescheduled. This isn't like her. I'm starting to worry.
It's just after 3 now. Are you sure she told you she would stay here tonight?
Yes. She was going to cancel her appointments for the rest of the week so we could spend time together. The Jill that I know always does what she says.
I can drive by her house, check to see if she's there. Her office, too.
You're sure? It would ease my mind. I can start cleaning up this mess. I can stay here tonight. The beds aren't damaged. I know you're my guardian, and if you'd rather go to your place, I'm okay with that. As long as this, she pointed to the ankle monitor, is allowed to be wherever we go.
I'm fine staying here. It's messy, but that's not a problem for me. There should be some Windex in the kitchen under the sink if you decide to clean the print powder. I have been told that it usually does a decent job.
I'll keep that in mind, Tessa said.
Are you sure you're okay being here alone?
Honestly, she wasn't. But it was the middle of the afternoon. The place had already been searched and trashed, and surely that was enough for one day. Chances of anything happening for half an hour or so were slim. I'll be fine. Just check on Jill and make sure the alarm is on when you leave.
Here. Put this in your pocket, just in case.
He handed her his cell phone. What if I need to call you?
You're right. Give it back, but use the landline. The phone in the kitchen wasn't smashed.
Okay. I'll get started then, Tessa said, and began scooping up handfuls of her past, Joel's past, and her children's past. She wasn't crying. That was a good thing, she supposed. Sam left without saying goodbye. Why was this thought running through her head when she was in the midst of cleaning up after someone who obviously thought she had something they wanted? Taking her time, Tessa sifted through the contents as she picked through the mess. An old John Grisham novel. He'd been Joel's favorite author. Two sweaters, one red and one purple. She held them against her face, inhaling the scent, hoping for that familiar little girl smell she loved so much. Sweet honey, fresh strawberries would always remind her of them. But the sweaters smelled musty, and she placed them inside an empty box. She would pack up their clothes and take them to a place where they would benefit other little girls. She would keep some of their clothes, like the Harry Potter shirts, but she wasn't even sure how long she would have the freedom to pack up their belongings. So it was best to do as much as she could while she was still a free woman. She bent over to grab a handful of Joel's dress shirts when an old photograph caught her attention. She dropped the shirts in a pile and reached for the small frame. She didn't remember this. It was a picture of Joel, maybe when he was in the 7th or 8th grade. A school picture. The background was the typical sky blue color most school photographers used. But this photo looked different. Standing by the window to capture the light, she viewed the picture closely, then removed it from the frame. She traced the face, feeling the texture of the photo. It was sturdier than your typical stock school photos. She looked at the back of the picture. On the bottom left of the picture, in gold script, it read, Canterburys, Savannah, Georgia. Joel never lived in Georgia, she said out loud. She looked at the face in the picture. It was definitely Joel. But why hadn't he told her he had lived in Georgia? It was odd, as he was a true Florida cracker, born and bred, his words. There weren't many true Floridians, it being such a tourist state. Something they both shared, their birth state. The pharmaceutical company started by Grant was in Florida. Joel went to college at Florida State University in Tallahassee. That's where he met Sam. Though Sam continued his education in Georgia, he'd said he went to Emory Law. Maybe there was a connection? It was perplexing, to say the least. She tucked the photo in her pocket and would ask Sam if he knew that Joel had gone to school in Georgia. She started scooping up another handful of clothes when the thought struck her that there was something odd about the picture. She took it from her pocket and went back to stand by the window, where the lighting was better. The boy was Joel, but there was something different about him in the photo. She turned the photo left and right and viewed it from every angle possible before she realized what was slightly odd. It was the eyes in the picture. Joel's green eyes sparkled. It was one of his best features, she thought. But in this picture, his eyes were empty, lifeless. Could this be a picture of Joel's twin? And could that be the other man who showed up at the house the day of the murders? She shoved the picture in her back pocket. Sure that Sam would know, or maybe Rochelle, she focused her attention on the massive amount of junk that had been tossed across the wood floor. What had they hoped to find? Could it have been teenagers? Knowing the history of the house, maybe they thought trashing her house was a great way to spend their day? She knew that kids did this kind of thing for kicks, but it was a huge risk given the presence of the media vultures lurking outside like shadows. Had that been part of the challenge? The thrill of not getting caught? She could go on with 1,000 different scenarios, and not a single one would help her in getting the house back in some kind of order. She had boxed up most of the clothes when she realized that Sam had been gone longer than 30 minutes. She had assumed that Jill still lived in the same house in Whiskey Creek, south of here. It used to take her about 15 minutes to drive there, 10 extra if you were caught behind a school bus. Then it hit her. It was December. Prime tourist season for the Sunshine State. It would take at least half an hour to get to Jill's house. She felt better knowing the traffic was probably bumper to bumper. Plus, if he drove downtown to her office, he'd be at least another hour. These were the issues of daily life that she hadn't had to deal with in prison. In prison, you did what you were told to do, nothing more and nothing less. She had lived by the rules of the prison, and maybe she would have to live out the rest of her life and die by those rules. But negotiating, planning, gauging driving times? These were things she would have to get used to, assuming that Sam was right and she would avoid being returned to prison, that she could live the rest of her life as a free woman. This was only the third day she was away from prison, yet it was beginning to feel like her life in prison belonged to someone else. Still, adjusting to the day-to-day activities of normal life was going to take some time. She hated the word, adjusting. That's what they called acclimating to your situation in prison. In reverse, prisoners adjusted to their new 7-foot by 10-foot living quarters. They adjusted to every other day showers. They adjusted to lights out at the same time every evening. She prayed she wouldn't have to return to that hellhole. She had made no friends in prison, though a few of the convicts had tried to befriend her. She wasn't stupid. She knew what went on when the lights were turned out, and she swore to herself that she would never allow herself to be victimized for however long she was there, and in 10 years, she hadn't succumbed to participating in the nighttime passion that most inmates engaged in. Her thoughts were careening all over the place when she thought she heard a noise downstairs. She stopped what she was doing and went to stand by the door of the master bedroom. Nothing. Probably her imagination. She turned around and was ready to go back into the room to do more cleaning when she heard the noise again. She paused just outside the master bedroom door, waiting. Footsteps. That was what she had heard. Someone was making crunching sounds as they walked over the broken dishes in the kitchen. The phone was in the kitchen. Damn. She inched her way past the bedroom's entrance but kept close to the wall. She waited, careful not to bump into anything. Again, she heard footsteps walking over broken glass. Whoever it was, they were trying to be quiet. They knew she was alone in the house. Tessa dared to ease away from the wall where, if she could lean far enough, she could see past the wall into the kitchen. Stretching as far as she could without falling, She saw a pair of feet clad in black boots. Obviously, it was a man. Wishing she had kept Sam's cell phone, she tried to remember if there was a phone jack in Poppy's or Piper's room. Not that it would matter, since the portable phone she had had was crushed in a pile downstairs, most likely by her intruder. She watched the black boots-clad feet move around in the kitchen. Back and forth, back and forth. Then the man stopped walking and stood still. Tessa could tell by the position of the boots that the man was now facing in her direction. She practically mashed herself into the wall. The man just stood there. Had she made a noise? No, she was being very careful. She listened, then stretched out a second time for another look. She could not see him anywhere in the kitchen. The booted man was gone. Or he was in another room. Her heart rate quadrupled. Sweat trickled down the back of her neck. Think, think, think. I have to get out of this house. This place was evil. She could feel it in her bones. There. A noise. She heard it again. Afraid to chance a look, she tried to place where the sounds were coming from. The hallway. Her bedroom. Had the son of a bitch forgotten something? Had he returned to steal her clothes? Suddenly, it occurred to her she had only one chance to race down the stairs to the kitchen where the phone was. If only he stayed in the bedroom long enough. Or should I stay put? Wait for Sam? No! Sam could die! Whoever it was could kill him when he came into the house. She wouldn't let another person she cared for die. Never. She strained to hear. Yes, he is still in my room. For now. Carefully, she removed her ankle boots. One, then the other. If she kept them on, they would make noise. If she took them off, she would only risk cutting her feet. She would take her chances on her feet. They would heal. It was now or never. Without a second thought, she flew down the stairs, as quietly and quickly as possible. She stopped when she reached the bottom of the steps. Holding her breath, she inched her way around the wall. Only half of the living room was visible from where she stood. Lowering herself onto her belly, she eased her way across the main living area, behind the leather chairs facing the pool, one inch at a time. Move, stop, listen. Move, stop, listen. She was almost there. Move, stop, listen. She didn't hear him. She eased her way across the threshold into the kitchen. Her hands met slivers of glass. Blood trickled from her palm to her wrist. The phone was on the countertop. Only a few feet away. What was that? She heard him. Closer. She smelled him. Oh, my God.
You thought I was dead, didn't you, Tessa?
Was she dreaming? Yes.
Didn't you?
He shoved her face into the glass. He pushed harder. She felt the glass slice into her skin. But you didn't feel pain in dreams. Or did you? This was not a dream.
Answer me, Tessa.
This was real. The voice, the smell, the positioning of those black boots. Joel? Wrapping his fist around her hair, he jerked her head back so far, she thought surely her neck would break. Cold, hard steel touched her neck. Please, don't do this!
You bitch! You ruined my life! Get up!
Tessa pushed herself into an upright position as soon as he released her. She leaned against the bottom cabinets, using them to steady herself as she tried to stand. Her legs felt like jello. She tried to think. 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 Joel is alive. Here in the kitchen. There, kitchen. The telephone rang.
Answer it and you're dead.
She nodded. The phone continued to ring. Was the answering machine on? Did she even have an answering machine? The ringing stopped. She must reason with him. Joel. Her voice didn't sound like her own. Fear stole her breath, her voice. Fear took her daughter's lives. Shaking as if the temperature were more like the Northeast at Christmas time and not Florida, she tried to speak in as normal a voice as she could muster. Joel, listen to me. Please. I don't understand anything. Please. Tell me what you want. There. Now I sound more like myself.
You were planning on leaving me, just like Jack did. He didn't want to be around me. All he wanted to do was play with Mommy, all the time. He was mine. She said she was going to send me away. You're just like her, you know that?
Tessa focused on the man she had once loved. He had aged badly. His hair was thinning, and his green eyes glinted with pure evil. His skin looked like old leather. The sun. Wherever he'd been, he had lived in the sun. Like who? Who am I just like? And who is Jack? What are you talking about? She dared to ask, almost sure that she already knew the answer. Understanding, finally, why the body in the pool had seemed strange. Understanding why Joel was so upset when he found out that they were going to have twins. Understanding why he never spoke of his mother and had never told her his mother's name.
Mommy! Jack's very best friend! Lois! The whore!
Dear Lord, he was totally mad. I have to keep him talking. Surely Sam will be here soon. I never met your mother, remember? She said, hoping he would focus on what he was telling her and not on what she was doing. The drawer where Sam put the knives was just within reach.
You're just like her, stupid whore.
She moved her hand slowly so as not to draw attention to her movements. An inch at a time, she traced the edges of the drawers, feeling for the knob.
You think you're home free now, don't you?
She shuddered at his words. I don't understand.
I watched the news, Tessa. Or did you forget that little detail?
Back and forth, his personality veered between childlike petulance one minute and insane, evil Joel the next. Yes, I remember now.
When I learned you might have a chance at freedom, well, I couldn't allow you to one-up me, could I?
He really is batshit crazy, completely off his rocker.
Just kill me then. Get it over with.
Her voice was stronger, louder. Maybe she should scream for help. It would be a good time for one of those nosy reporters to do their job. Spy, sneak, search. He laughed.
Tessa, I have a question for you. If you give me the correct answer, you will add 5 minutes to your life.
Yes, let's play a game. I always enjoyed playing games. This game is the game of life. You always like to play games. You played games with them. You always stopped when I came home. Remember? You didn't let me play.
For God's sake, the extent of his insanity was off the charts. She couldn't even begin to understand the deranged, psychopathic man he had become. No. Cancel that thought. The sick son of a bitch he had always been. How? she asked herself. Could I have lived with him for 11+ years and not known how sick and evil he was?
The game. Let's play. I'm going to ask you a question, and if you answer correctly, you win. And your prize, there has to be a prize for the winner, is that 5 minutes will be added to your life.
Once again, his voice was the sing-song voice of a child. Ask me the question, Joel. Let's play your game of life.
Number one. I like to play this way. It's like school. Okay, here is the first part of the first question. What is sodium hydroxide?
His voice no longer sounded the same as before. The sing-song quality was gone, though it was still the voice of a child. It was as if a different child had taken the place of the other one. Multiple personality disorder?
Tick-tock, tick-tock. Better hurry, Tessa. Time to answer is running out.
I forgot the question.
Stupid bitch. You get one more chance.
Evil Joel voice. I'm sorry.
What is sodium hydroxide?
He'd reverted to the sing-song voice again. Now he was sitting on one of the bar stools, and she could see the hunting knife where he had placed it on the countertop. Lie, she said.
Part two of question number one. What do sodium hydroxide and the human body have in common?
She tried to think, and when the answer finally came to her, she lost her breath. Gasping, she tried to push the words out of her mouth. Why? Manic laughter, and his eyes lit up like Satan's might upon consigning another soul to the depths of hell. But all he said was,
"All those science classes you took in college. I was right. You are a stupid whore. Tick-tock, tick-tock, ding-ding-ding, time is up."
"You sick son of a bitch! What do you want from me?" She screamed the words as loud as she could. If he was going to kill her, he'd better get started. He jumped off the bar stool and reached for the hunting knife.
"You're gonna die this time. No more minutes added to your miserable life, you fucking whore!"
He came toward her then, the knife raised high above his head. Tessa cowered in the corner but didn't dare to run. In one swift motion, her neck would be severed. The reality of what he'd done hit her full force. "You insane son of a bitch! You killed my daughters! And before that, you molested them!" Her breath came in short gasps. "You don't deserve to live!"
"Wait, wait, wait! You're not the leader, Tessa. I am. You're just like Mommy, always wanting to be first."
The sing-song childlike voice again. Before she changed her mind, she tucked her head into her chest, rolled onto the floor, and grabbed his ankles, knocking him to the floor with her. The black boots were heavy, but she didn't care. She was going to kill him or die. There was no other choice. Twisting his ankle into an unnatural position, she turned her body with the movement to avoid getting entangled herself. Bits of glass cut into her arms, but in the adrenaline rush, she couldn't feel any pain. Her strength seemed as if it were 10 times more than normal. She had almost succeeded in twisting the foot she was holding completely around when his other foot smashed into her face. Tessa felt a sharp snap, then felt warm blood oozing from her nose. She continued to hold his ankle as blood dripped onto her hands and his boot, causing her to lose her grip. His boot came down a second time, only this time it caught her on the edge of her left shoulder. Another snap, and a hot jolt of pain ran down the length of her arm. She tried to move her left arm, and a hot, icy pain traveled up her arm to her shoulder. She rolled onto her back. With her right hand, she used her shirt to wipe the blood from her eyes. "If you're going to kill me, you sick, perverted piece of shit, then you better have the guts to look me in the eye when you do it!"
"You are stupid, Tessa, aren't you?"
He kicked the back of her head. She winced. She would not give the bastard the pleasure of hearing her beg for her life. If he was going to kill her, she wanted every single moment etched in his sick mind forever. "Wait!" She needed to know. She didn't care what he did to her after, but first she had to know. "Joel, why did you kill them? Why? They were just little girls. Why?" Tessa was sobbing now, and she didn't care. Hot, salty tears burned the cuts on her face, yet all she could think of is what her precious daughters had gone through, here, in this house, right under her nose. The entire time?
"Answer me, goddammit! You at least owe me that much!"
Struggling to keep from passing out, she forced herself to stare up at him, her gaze unwavering.
"They were just like you, and Jack, and Mommy. Never wanted to play games with me."
The plaintive sing-song voice of the child was back again.
"I was trying to teach them how to play the game, just like Mommy taught me."
Oh, dear God. Then it hit her. Liam. What had he done to Liam?
"Did you kill Liam?"
she asked, her voice muffled from pain and the blood from her broken nose.
"That little bastard. Of course I killed him. What do you think I used the sodium hydroxide for? And I killed Jack, too. He actually came to the house. I was a bit surprised."
The evil Joel voice again.
"But it was the perfect ending for my new beginning. I already had a new identity set up, with more than enough money to lead a carefree life just in case something went wrong. And when you decided to go to San Maribel, I knew that you were going to leave me and take the girls. I couldn't allow that to happen. Then Liam showed up, and he had to be killed. And so did the girls. Jack's appearance was just bad luck for him and incredibly good luck for me. And when you were convicted of killing me and the girls, I knew it was the perfect ending to that game of life. But then they let you go, so I had to come back and put an end to the game once and for all."
Tessa rolled away from Joel seconds before he lifted the hunting knife, aiming it at her throat.
"Freeze!"
Joel's bright green eyes sparked with fire. When he saw Officer Waterman's gun aimed at him, he tightened his grip on the knife, and this time, he used both hands as he raised them high above his head, garnering all the force he could to stab her in the forehead. Tessa's world went black. Epilogue. 18 months later. Sam reached for Tessa's hand as the newly elected governor prepared to speak.
"Good evening, ladies, gentlemen. First, I would like to thank each and every one of you for your vote. It was a close race, but it only takes one more vote than the other candidate to win."
Applause.
"Tonight, as your newly elected governor, you all know why you're here."
He paused.
"Almost 13 years ago, one of the city's most horrendous tragedies took place. The lives of Piper and Poppy Jameson, along with those of their uncles, Liam Jameson and Jack Jameson,
were taken by a vicious, callous man who was the father and the brother of the victims.
Michael Chen looked at Tessa.
I would like to formally apologize to Ms. Tessa Jameson. I was the lead prosecutor in the case, and I made a very bad mistake. I did not listen to her. So bent on getting a conviction, I and my staff focused all of our attention on her, a woman, a wife and mother who'd just lost her entire family. I can't begin to think that my words will have any healing effect on the survivors, but I hope in some small way they will. Rochelle Jameson lost a son.
Sam leaned over and whispered in her ear.
Now?
She mouthed back. He nodded. Tessa took Rochelle's hand, then whispered in her ear.
Already?
Rochelle asked in a low voice. Tessa nodded.
I'm coming with you.
Quickly and hopefully, they quietly eased out of the auditorium without distracting too many people who had come to listen to Governor Chen discuss a new bill the Florida Senate had recently passed. The Jameson Bill. The bill protected women who had been released from prison and were being stalked, harassed, or had an attempt made on their life by their significant other. Tessa had worked tirelessly with Lee and Darlene to take the bill to the Florida Senate. Surprised and proud when it was passed, Tessa's loss might prevent another woman in similar circumstances from losing her life or that of a family member. It was a simple thing, nothing too complex. When a woman was released from confinement in a jail, prison, or halfway house, if she was harassed by a significant other who had been instrumental in her having been convicted and served time, the harasser would automatically be jailed for 90 days, then would receive a full mental evaluation before being released. It wasn't huge, but it was something dear to her and to Rochelle, who had become a surrogate mother to her. Rochelle had sold her house in Miami and moved to Naples, where Tessa now lived in a ritzy condo overlooking the Gulf of Mexico. As soon as they stepped outside, the June heat hit them full force.
"Can you believe it's this hot at night?"
Rochelle asked.
"Or am I having another hot flash?"
she added, laughing. Inside the car, Tessa's bright red Porsche, Sam cranked over the engine and clicked the air conditioning on.
"Do you think Lara can handle this?"
Tess asked the others as Sam backed out of the parking garage.
"I do, Tess," Sam said. "She's not the same girl she was. She has finally grown into a woman. At least in my opinion."
"She has," Tessa agreed. "I think her finding out about Joel, Liam, and Jack, the poor twin who'd spent most of his life in Savannah, and the girls, changed her. Made her realize that life was too short to waste it on dope and dresses. What do you think of Logan?"
"He seems like a decent guy. He married your little sister, so he better take care of her, or else,"
Sam teased.
"Did you call Lee and Jill?"
Rochelle asked from the back seat.
"No, Logan did. They should be there by the time we arrive." "I hope we're in time. I would hate to miss this life-changing event. Plus, I can't wait to see Lara's face when she sees her baby for the first time."
"As it should be, a surprise. I don't think I'd want to know the gender of my child if I were lucky enough to have one,"
Sam said. Tessa remained quiet. While she and Sam were in love and planned on getting married in the fall in Vermont, she wasn't so sure about children. She was almost 49, and he was 53. But never say never. Look at Jill. She was ready to burst with a baby boy. Lee was so excited, he'd replaced all his pink ties and shirts with pale blue ones. They were older, too. But Tessa knew that Jill would make an excellent mother, and Lee was already the stereotypical doting father. Sam pulled into the parking lot at Gulf Coast Hospital. Inside, they took the elevator to the second floor, where the birthing suites were located. Inside room number 216 were Laura, Logan, and the baby.
"You've had the baby already?"
Tessa said as she hurried across the room.
"Yep. Here. You want to hold her?"
Tessa's eyes filled with tears.
A baby girl.
She took Elizabeth Marie Rivera and cradled her in her arms. Tears dripped down her face. Life hadn't always been good to her, but right now, she was happy. Laura was happy, and baby Elizabeth would be the most spoiled niece in the whole world. Sam stood behind her. With a finger, he traced the baby's cheek.
"Soft as down," he said, smiling.
Tessa cradled the baby in her arms, then inhaled. Strawberries and honey. She looked at Laura and smiled. She remembered. Jill and Lee arrived, her belly entering the room a few seconds before she did. When Jill saw the baby, she sat down and cried.
"She is absolutely beautiful, Laura. She has Logan's eyes."
They all looked at her.
"What?"
"She hasn't opened them," Tessa said, laughing.
"But when she does, she'll have those gorgeous blue eyes," she insisted.
"Of course. Laura and Logan both have blue eyes." They all laughed and took turns holding the new addition to the family. Rochelle was now designated as nanny to baby Elizabeth. In the short time since Joel's death, they had all become a mishmash family. Tessa had had the house torn down and the property totally excavated. After she had received permission, the entire property had been converted into a grassy retreat amidst all the beautiful and expensive houses in the gated community. And on it were two memorials, one to the Jameson girls and one to their uncles. The memorial to Jack and Liam consisted of a large Calder-like mobile of two manatees swimming around and around a small whale that spouted water into the air every minute. The memorial to Piper and Poppy she had placed at the base of the lighthouse at the edge of the island. It was a very large sculpture of a kitten's paw and a jingle seashell. The lighthouse was ringed by a newly planted semicircle of different kinds of red flowers that bloomed all year round, and a semicircle of purple flowers that was also perpetually in bloom. Harry's work proved what Joel had told her the day he tried to murder her. He had indeed killed both Jack and Liam. After dousing Liam's body with sodium hydroxide, he had buried his remains in the yard, which was confirmed by the DNA analysis of the bones that had been dug up. Jack's body had ended up in the swimming pool, and everyone had assumed it was the body of his twin brother, Joel. Jack, it turned out, had spent his life after his mother's death at the Canterbury Institute in Savannah, Georgia, an institution for the mentally challenged. He had been released only 2 days before his death. From his doctor, they had learned that Jack had witnessed Joel push their mother down the steps. Jack had always been slow, and after Lois's death, Grant had had him placed at Canterbury for his own protection. She didn't want to know any more than that. Right now, for the first time, her life was hers, on her own terms.
The End. This is Nina Alvemar. We hope you have enjoyed this production of Sweet Vengeance by Fern Michaels. Recorded books are available wherever audiobooks are sold, including Audible.com, Audiobooks.com, Apple iTunes, and in public libraries through RB Digital. Thank you for being a Recorded Books reader.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.